Welcome to Bengals Scribe Session, presented by JosephOtto.com and Inquirer Sports. Here, your Bengals beat writers Paul Daner Jr. and Richard Skinner escort you inside the walls of Paul Brown Stadium to hear the news, analysis, and observations unfolding within the team from those documenting it daily. All with the sidecar of snark and absurdity you've come to expect. Let's go. We're about to start a party in here. He's made strums and guitar in here.
Up in the air. AJ Green makes the catch.
Oh man!
A deflected ball winds up in the hands of AJ Green as the clock hits zero.
All right, welcome to the latest edition of Scribe Session. I'm Paul Daner Jr., and you might be asking yourself, why do you sound so clear? Why does this sound so good? That's because we are in a professional studio. I'm here at ESPN 1530 with the one, the only Mo Egger. Mo, what's up?
Don't tell the people here because they'll charge rent.
They will.
Trust me. Gannett will get a bill.
There will be yeah. a bill involved
in
this.
Oh, you used our studio? Okay. That'll be $7,500. $500. So let's kind of keep it on the DL.
Hey, I might be able to slip that through an expense report. I'll do my best. But hey, thanks for joining me. You know, I know you got a busy life of doing things, of trying to contain the masses who want to throw trash on Andy Dalton's lawn because it's the move they know. You know, it's the move they know.
It's the default. Yeah.
It's the default mechanism. It's been. I mean, how have shows been the last month? Have you been holding it together?
Excuse me. Yes, I'm dealing with that. So
yeah, you've been sick for like 2 months. I want to say
I've had the world's most. You know, Andy Dalton's playoff issues haven't lingered as long as this cold has. You know, two things, and one has been kind of surprising, and the other has been reaffirming. The reaffirming part is, you know, I went up to that game in Indianapolis, and I walked out, and I was just sort of lamenting out loud how. Life was going to really be brutal for the next 365 days because there's nothing new to talk about. And that maybe apathy was going to set in. And I even said to somebody, I'm like, man, that the week after the playoff game, this is going to be brutal because what are we really going to say anything new? I think people had just kind of shrugged their shoulders. I was really surprised at the call volume. And it dispelled the notion of apathy. And I can't speak for post-game shows or, you know, Lance McAllister's show or anybody else who does sports talk, but I didn't get the guy frothing at the mouth. I didn't get the guy...
Which is rare.
Yeah, I didn't get the guy who's burning his jersey and he's not going to go to Bengals games anymore. I think that person's already weighed in. I think that person has either kind of gone away or whatever. What I've gotten over the last couple of weeks has been a really good dialogue about quarterback. And not just Andy Dalton, but the position, you know, the position as a whole, what to do with it in the draft and, you know, how Dalton's contract is going to impact, you know, other decisions. Maybe it's because my caller's a smarter caller. I don't know. Maybe it's because the people who just want to scream and yell have already done that or they have other forums to do that or they tweet you now. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But over the last 3 or 4 weeks, ever since the playoff game, I don't want to say it's been fun because I'd prefer we'd been talking about more playoff games. But I think it's been a pretty good couple of weeks of radio because I don't think we've had the guy yelling and screaming, and there certainly hasn't been any apathy.
Yeah, I've heard that, and it's refreshing because we've sat here and talked about how just the completely mad without reason guy is a big part of what makes doing this frustrating at times.
Sure.
But there has, I think, the informed reader listener. Is definitely showing their head, and I think because there's so much more information out there and so many ways to get it, I just think that everyone is much more informed. And I think you're right. I think the people that aren't informed gave up.
Yeah,
and I think the people that are informed understand that it's maybe not as far off as people that just say Dalton sucks want to be. It makes for story. I know I've enjoyed listening to it. I was surprised by it as well. And I just, you know, every time I come here, I always want to get a good gauge of the fan base, because you guys have a good feel for it here. And it just seems like it's a refreshing thing. Do you sense from them optimism?
No.
No. has there ever been a sense of optimism in this room?
No. Yeah. Yes.
Outside of from you?
The answer is yes, in 2013. I mean, you know, that year up until the playoff game, you know, I sensed optimism that I hadn't heard and felt since 2005. I think with Andy Dalton specifically, we've stopped making it a black and white issue, because I think even his most ardent defenders are now like, well, okay, maybe you have a point.
Yeah.
and I think that his most vocal critics, I think his most vocal critics want him to succeed. Mm-hmm. You know, want him to want. I think they, with rare exception, I think they want to be wrong. And so I think we've kind of stopped making this a, he's awesome, he's going to be great, or he's, you know, totally terrible. I think it's easier than ever before to take a longer view of the NFL and step back and bam, look at some situations and go, boy, we're glad the Bengals aren't that. And then it's easier to look at a lot of other situations, you know, the teams that the Bengals are going to have to beat and look at them and go, boy, we want that. I mean, I think Andy Dalton is such a gray issue. And I think people understand how hard it is to replace him. And I think people understand how difficult it's going to be for them as a team to beat the types of quarterbacks like Andrew Luck and like Joe Flacco and like Tom Brady in the postseason. And so, I don't know that I would call it pessimism, but there's just a great amount of doubt. There's not a lot of trust.
Yeah, no, you know, nor should there be.
There's no trust in the quarterback. There's no trust in the head coach. And I said on maybe the Tuesday or Wednesday after the playoff game, when you woke up on Sunday morning or you saw on Saturday evening before the Colts game that AJ wasn't going to play, everybody knew what the outcome was going to be.
Right.
And that's a reflection on how good AJ is and what they don't have behind him. But it's also a reflection on how people feel about the quarterback and the coach.
Yeah.
And that's justified. That's fair.
Yeah, it is fair. Well, I want to bring up one thing that you wrote about that I liked, and I think we can have a good debate about, because I'm with you on a lot of your points about it, but I think there's an extra element of it that changes things, and I think can open up a lot of conversation pieces. You wrote about to quarterback controversy or not to quarterback controversy, and I know I think Lance was on the opposite side of it, but you wrote about this last week, and it was really well done. You had really interesting points about why not? Why not have a core? What is wrong with having competition at the most important position when you're drafting projects as defensive ends and you're drafting first, you know, using your first round draft pick on a position, a cornerback, where you have it's important position. You want to have five guys back there that are first round draft picks. Why not load up on that? And I thought you made some really, really good points. And the thing that I wonder about in that respect is, okay, but what if you already have the best that you can have as far as a controversy goes? Mm-hmm. The problem with it is we can all admit that if you're going to say one thing about Andy Dalton, his psyche is probably something that you're concerned about.
Sure.
I mean, and I think that's proven in games, and I think it plays a role in the play, played a role in the playoff and the primetime thing, and you have to worry about that. And so don't you have to say, before you bring in a controversy, and this is something that Marvin Lewis alluded to, and I'll bring that audio in here in a little bit after we get into this topic, is that you have to bring in a controversy only if you feel like you have one deserving of one. Mm-hmm. And I don't know where the controversy comes from. I think it's more than a Bengals problem. I think it's a league problem. Yeah. Is what are you going to do? You're going to bring in a free agent who is essentially much like Jason Campbell. Uh-huh. Or you're going to draft a guy who's essentially much like A.J. McCarron. Uh-huh. Unless you're trading all your picks to draft up to get Jameis Winston or Marcus Mariota or any of those guys, which you're not. Uh-huh. Which I think would be, I don't know, you could maybe hear that argument, but I would say it's a little crazy to do. You'd have to give up a lot. So what do you already have the best that you could probably already have. So if you know that, and you know that a key to your season is going to be Andy Dalton playing better, why not stand there and say the last thing I want is a quarterback competition?
Well, I guess a couple of things. First of all, if what's going to dictate our decision making is the fragile psyche of the quarterback, then we have our answer. If Andy Dalton is so fragile that he can't understand why at this stage in his career, with a contract that for a lack of a better way of putting it, the Bengals can void at the end of next year.
Right.
Knowing what he has failed to do and what he's done, you know, if Andy Dalton can't understand that, and that's going to torpedo his ability to contribute, then there's your answer. You don't have the right guy. You can't make, you might disagree.
But you have a guy.
I don't think you can make critical decisions solely based on this person's feelings are going to get hurt.
I agree with you.
Not in the big boy world.
No, I agree with that.
And then so I come back to the word controversy. Because there's a difference between competition and controversy. Controversy's outside stuff, right? Controversy's radio talk show topics, blog fodder, comments on your website. Controversy's outside. I mean, do you think it would be controversial inside the Bengals, inside the building? Let's just use an example. Let's say in the third round they picked Bryce Petty.
Right.
I don't know if he's deserving of a third round selection.
Just
I don't know
if in
let's
theory.
Just the Bengals go, all right, third round, Bryce Petty. He's not going to start this year, but we're just going to put him in our back pocket. We're going to develop him. And if push comes to shove with Andy Dalton, we've got an option. Doesn't mean we won't look at other options in the future. Doesn't mean that Bryce Petty's going to play it down. He might ultimately be trade fodder. Within the building, is that controversial? Does it turn the locker room on its head? You would know far better than I.
I think Marvin Lewis realizes he needs to make sure everybody stays on board with Andy Dalton. There's enough people that are well aware of his failures there, and particularly teammates. You don't want to bring in the idea of doubt. And this is where he comes from, right, wrong, or indifferent. I can tell you his mentality on this is the idea of not having a quarterback competition and that it only brings in bad things is that it maybe divides a locker room with one guy or the other, or it makes people doubt their leader.
But how do they not already do that? I mean, they're in the film room. They see. They know. Look, they're not going to say
maybe
it
is a charade. Maybe it is a charade that the coaches are trying to pull over the team's eyes. But maybe these guys can have that pulled over their eyes a little bit. I'm with you. I understand what you're saying, but I think the idea that the united front of the team is we can win with this guy buy in. Mm-hmm. They believe as coaching staff that the team should buy into whatever it is that they're selling, even if they're selling snow cones to Eskimos. You know, I mean, you know the old theory. Yeah. I mean, they're selling that Andy Dalton can win for them, and they have four playoff appearances to back that
sure.
up.
Yeah.
So, I think putting any semblance of doubt into the rest of the team is where Marvin is coming from. That's not something he's interested in. Unless there is a viable, maybe he actually, this guy, somebody could be the answer. So if you're talking about drafting a Bryce Petty in the third round, A.J. McCarron says, I already am Bryce Petty.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he basically.
But maybe not. I mean, look, maybe the Bengals have had a year to look at A.J. McCarron and go.
But
no.
They haven't,
you know, but
because he's been a dude standing on the side, you know,
look,
eating ramen noodles in the locker room.
They evaluated him before they drafted him,
right.
And decided let's wait till the fifth round to take him. I think that's
as did everybody else.
As did everybody else. So I think we have a pretty decent idea of how they and everybody feels about AJ McCarron. So there's the word controversy and there's the word competition. And the one thing that Marvin said to you in Mobile was, when does a competition work? First of all, every coach I've ever heard in any sport has always embraced competition. Every year the Bengals have a draft. They've taken backup defensive ends, Margus Hunt, Will Clark, guys who barely saw the field. They've taken corners who haven't played in the first couple of years in the NFL. They've drafted guys where they have existing players, good players. And Marvin always says, well, competition is good. Why do we make an exception at the most important position?
Right.
And then he says, when's competition worked? Seattle?
Yeah.
Kind of worked.
Seattle worked. No one in Seattle thought that Russell Wilson was going to be the guy, but then he showed up in camp and was great, and
right.
Now they've won a Super Bowl.
They signed Matt Flynn, and the rest is
San Diego back in the day with Drew Brees
sure.
and Phillip
so
Rivers.
It's not draft a guy, and that player is going to replace Andy Dalton. But to me, if you have any amount of doubt about Andy Dalton, any amount of doubt, how are you at least in January at least not open to other ideas? It doesn't mean you have to. Look, maybe you do the entire draft evaluation and you go, look, there's just nobody who fits. Fine. I don't like the idea of dismissing any option in January when you are potentially dealing with saying goodbye to Andy Dalton at the end of next year. Would you like to have somebody maybe in your back pocket that you could at least play somebody who is better than perhaps somebody you would draft next year or look at in free agency next year. What's wrong with bettering the position as a whole? Now, if you decide at the end of all that, Dalton, Campbell, McCarron, we're good, fine. But in no other position would you say, look, we're just not going to explore issues down the depth chart, future considerations, one-day potential replacements, guys who we put in the game. I mean, I've talked about
this
often.
But no other position is the same as quarterback. I don't think that you can lump quarterback.
I mean, you've never heard of a defensive end controversy? Come on.
Yeah. it's just blowing up the lines. I just have 18 callers here all wanting to talk about Marcus Hunt.
Yes, Marcus Clunt, Will Clark, Robert Gathers.
Yeah. I mean, it's just inherently different. It's the most important position in sports. And, you know, it's more important than the coach. You know, it's more important than anybody else in the building as far as winning games. So you can't treat it the same. I don't think you can treat it the same as other positions in that respect.
To me, that lends credence to even more taking a better look at it. Look, we can't afford to have a quarterback void here. We can't afford, you know, when Carson Palmer put a gun to their head, they kind of got caught with their pants down.
Right.
And they were fortunate enough that there was a quarterback in the second round that could do what Andy Dalton has done. But they were pretty much up a creek for a while. And what you don't want to be is up a creek. You don't want to sit there in a year or whatever and go, first of all, we have to sign all these other guys. Okay. Which is going to be a huge consideration. Going to sign all these other guys, and Dalton's salary is going to increase. His performance hasn't increased. We'd love to move on from him, but we have nobody to move on to.
Yes.
Right?
Right. Right. And this is what brings in the bigger NFL issue for me, which I think is an interesting thing to explore, is that the NFL, to me, because of the rule changes they've made and the way they've turned it into a passing league, now has a parity problem. Because you have the haves and have-nots of quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. And teams without them are hosed. They're the old Kansas City Royals, which is a terrible example because they just made a run. But they're the team with no – they're the old Marlins, or they're the old – the teams – the Rays. All the teams in baseball days when – the Yankees have $212 million, and then the Marlins are spending $14 million. It's impossible to compete, you would say. And the assets are the same way now. Having a quarterback, one of the top 10, is like having $100 million extra in assets.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And you have the teams without them. They're so hard to find.
Mm-hmm.
The good ones, and there's such a huge risk in drafting one. Just look, go ahead, go to profootballreference.com and go to the draft over the last 3 years and look down all the quarterbacks that have been drafted and tell me what the percentages of those that work out. And those that do take them bomb franchises, and these are franchises that have no hope.
Yeah.
Look at the teams that are winning. We see it every year. You have no hope if you don't have Brady or Rodgers or Wilson or any of these guys that all were just playing in the last of the left of the last eight. You really don't have much hope. So the Bengals are a prime example of that. They're really one of the better examples of it, just because they're on the cusp of, well, maybe they do have one who's kind of good.
They're the most unique team in the NFL right now.
Yes.
You know, and maybe you could say maybe Kansas City with Alex Smith. But they're the most unique team. Look, he's better than most. He's not as good as many. He's better than, you know, I mean, I get it all the time. Well, would you rather be the Jets or the Browns or, you know, I mean, he's better than most.
Yeah.
He really is. And we tend to want to ignore that.
Real quick, I want to stop this real quick. We're slightly out of control because I want to bring in, I have this sound from Hugh Jackson, who was talking about Andy Dalton with me at the Senior Bowl. Again, this is myself, Jeff Hobson, with Hugh Jackson at the Senior Bowl, talking about his second year, Andy Dalton's interceptions, his own disappointment, injuries, pretty much all of the above. So here's a little bit of time with Hugh Jackson.
Look back, and really anytime any coach goes in his second year, it seems like it's a huge advantage.
Oh, yeah.
You get the first year, how much of that, even though you've been around, how much of that is, do you expect that big bump in continuity with the guys comfortable with you and stuff like that?
Most definitely. Yeah, I expect a tremendous jump, you know, all the way around. And, you know, obviously, if we can just stay away, get some luck with his injury, I think that will show itself. You know, I think they're used to me, and I truly know them, and I think it's, you know, a combination that they know what to expect and how it's going to be. And I think I kind of know exactly where our strengths lie, you know, and if we can just continue to get better fundamentally, over the next course of off-season workouts and those things, I think we'll be right where we need to be. I expect us to be one of the better offenses. I do.
Yeah.
That's my expectation. And to me, there's no reason why we shouldn't be.
Were you disappointed in that?
I was.
Yeah, you feel like you should have been better last year?
I think we could have been better. Yeah. I really do. And again, you know, when I look back at it, there's some. You can't be a really good offense when you don't have A.J. Green all the time. You can't be a really good offense when you don't have Marvin Jones. And, you know, you don't have Tyler Eifert. You really can't. I'm just being very honest.
Yeah.
I think you can be good, but I don't think you can be great.
Yeah.
And my charge is to make us great. Do I like where we finished offensively? No. Let me first tell you that I haven't finished below the top 10. You know, and again, I'm not beating my chest. I'm talking about as an offensive unit. And regardless of who's been there, we've been able to fit pieces together and make it work. We weren't able to do that, and I take responsibility for that. So we gotta get better. You know, I'm chomping at the bit. I wish we were practicing tomorrow.
Yeah.
Truth be told, but we're not. So we'll channel this aggression that I'm feeling, and we'll get it going when it's time.
You talked about the passing. You got to throw it better. How much of that is on Andy?
I think it's he plays a role, but it's everybody. You know, it's protection, it's route running, it's you know, the ability to get open, it's calls at the right time. It's a combination of everything. You know, when you're talking about throwing the ball, you know, the biggest thing in those things that we're talking about is don't turn it over. If you don't turn it over, then you got a chance to make a lot of other good things happen. I just think we're turning the ball over way too much, and that's first and foremost. We have to get that squared away. If we do nothing else, if we square that away, we'll be better because of that. Just because.
How do you fix that? Because you look at it, you do, you know, you trim down you got rid of the high risk throws a lot, and you have a much safer passing game, but still, interception percentage was even up.
Right. Well, the tip balls. I mean, I think there's. I mean, we did our study obviously, and there was 9 legitimate ones that we felt that there were decision making. You know, that we felt that he being Andy could do better. And I think he would look at those and say the same. There is another group of interceptions that happen where, you know, he wasn't able to step and throw, and so a ball gets tipped, or he gets hit, or we end up the ball come off a guy's hand or something like that. That, to me, you know, that's sometimes that's the luck of the draw, and they happen, but it happened too much for us.
Yeah.
You know, and so those are the things that we gotta fight and be better about, and obviously the decision-making ones, we got to do those better too. So if you can cut that in half, then you feel good about where you are from that standpoint. Because they're going to happen. I say they're not going to happen. They're going to happen. What I was disappointed, they start happening in bunches. You know, there's normally when one happens, there's been two, and then there's three, and that's what we can't do. We got to guard against that.
So about half of them at Andy, half of them something else?
Yeah, I think when we go through it, I think that's what we'll find. You know, and I think if we can just take the ones that are just him, you know, even though we don't want those, you know, you can kind of live with some of that. But we want to get it to where it's not happening at all. You know, we know we're going to have them, we respect we're going to have them, but we got to do a better job of managing them because it's too many right now.
You know, we don't talk about the Bengals in regular season terms anymore. That's to their credit. We don't talk about Andy Dalton. I don't care how he compares to the Jets or the Titans or the Jacksonville Jaguars. The only outcome that's going to make people happy is if they can beat Andrew Luck. Andrew Luck's going to be the standard setter in the AFC. You know, to get to the Super Bowl in the AFC for the next 10 years, you're probably going to have to go through Andrew Luck.
Right.
For the next 5 years, you're probably still going to have to go through Roethlisberger. For the next 7 to 8, you're still going to have to go through Flacco. For the next 2 to 3, you're still going to have to go through Tom Brady.
Mm-hmm.
Dalton's not as good as those guys.
No.
So, yeah, look.
You need the other guys.
Right, yeah. So, you know, yes, stability, NFL teams, you've written about this. NFL teams value stability at quarterback. The Bengals have achieved it. You can have a lot of success with Andy Dalton as your quarterback, but can you have the kind of success that is ultimately gonna you know, satisfy people? And right now, it's hard to conclude that the answer is yes.
Yeah, but it's also hard to conclude where that answer comes from. And,
sure.
I think that's really the question in the beginning of where we started with, should you come out and say, I don't want a competition? Because There really isn't anybody to provide it. It's the same way of saying you don't want a competition if you have Aaron Rodgers. Well, who's going to come in and compete with Aaron Rodgers? Yeah. I mean, if you really thought there was somebody better out there, I mean, the free agent list of quarterbacks is not inspiring, okay? And the draft is not inspiring. So if you come down and your season ends and you're evaluating your team for the last month like the Bengals have been, and you look at Andy Dalton, and then you go, you bring in Duke Tobin, and you bring in all your scouts, and you say, all right, what's out there in the free agent market? And they show you the list. And then once you're done vomiting,
you, Mark Sanchez doesn't do it for you.
No, Mark Sanchez, you're not. Maybe we could swing a trade for Ryan Mallett. You know, I mean, once you're done with that, and you watch the teams that tried that last year, Buffalo, mm-hmm. Houston, mm-hmm. with Mallett, Fitzpatrick, Kyle Orton. You know, you trot a neck beard in and see what happens. I mean, once you're done doing that. And then you say, okay, well, what does the draft have to offer? Well, there's two guys, and everybody else is A.J. McCarron.
Yeah.
And so you say, all right, well, this we know. So that's in front of you. Why would you then go out and say, I'm open to something,
because you shouldn't be. But in that regard, the Bengals are in a position of luxury, that if Andy Dalton's a quarterback next year with the team they have, they're a very good bet to win 10 games again. A very good bet to do that. And, you know, what happened to the Colts is still so fresh, nobody wants to say that. But right now, the roster as is, I would feel comfortable picking this team to get back to the postseason. So you're in that position of luxury right now where you can I know you don't want to make it about the other positions, but look at where the Bengals have drafted from the last couple of years. They haven't had a glaring first-round need where it's like, dude, if they don't address this right now and get a guy who can contribute right away, they're screwed.
Yeah.
So it's – you have the luxury of, we're going to pick you, Dre. You're going to be a gunner on special teams your second year after you don't play at all your first year.
Mm-hmm.
And then by your third year, we'll work you in because we have Leon Hall and Terrence Newman and Adam Jones, and we're kind of good. We can draft guys at defensive end, Margus Hunt, Will Clark. We don't need a lot from you, but we can develop you. We're in a position of luxury. We're loaded on the defensive line. Maybe not so much this past year, but still, we're loaded on the defensive line. You're in a position of luxury where there's needs. They got to get better, but it's not like, all right, this draft, if they don't draft this guy or this position immediately, they're screwed. They know who their quarterback is going to be next year. They very well, he might be the quarterback for the rest of the decade. He is under contract.
Yes.
As easy as it is to get out. So to me, that's when you kind of go, okay, we've got some, we're going to have compensatory picks, two of them this year. We're in a position where we can look big, look at other options. It doesn't have to be a guy who comes to camp next year and he's going to get the same reps as Andy Dalton. I think you can do both. You could say, look, we're improving the overall position. The overall health of the position is better, but Andy Dalton's our guy. And he's going to be our guy this year, and we're going to win with him this year. Why can't you do both?
I mean, you can try. You essentially would be bringing in your competition you'd be bringing in would be for – the third.
Why does that have to be competition?
Spot?
Why can't it be?
Because you have because you have three guys.
We're building depth.
They can't all stay.
Well, okay, so then you have. I mean,
and I'm okay with that.
Yeah,
if that's what you want to do. I don't know I don't know where that's coming from. I don't know where it's coming from.
Oh, look, you might get to April after we've interviewed everybody, worked out everybody, gone to the combine, and go, look, there's just nobody.
Yeah,
fine. I don't like the idea of dismissing anything in January.
I think they already know. You already have the season of all these college quarterbacks. I think they feel like they already know that's not going to change.
It would be helpful if we could just have the draft now.
Right.
And not go through the excruciating three-month process.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. But I think that they already have a pretty good idea inside of, in Duke Tobin's room that there's not going to be a guy that could come in and compete for a second or a third spot at the quarterback position
now. So let's say, it's going to be really interesting in a year. Because I think we have an idea of what Dalton is. We know who he is. All right?
We absolutely know who he is. Okay, and anybody think he's going to get better is crazy.
So maybe everybody's healthier next year. Maybe there's better, overall production from the offense. Maybe another year in Hugh's system can mine some hidden talent from Andy Dalton. I don't know what it is. But what happens in a year if we're basically running in place and we're dealing with the same type of quarterback? What do you do in a year?
In a year, it could be blow it up time.
Sure.
Absolutely.
So
you'd like to have something, but you know who's not thinking about blow it up time? Marvin Lewis, because he'd be the one getting blown up.
Yeah, and that's fair. Marvin's thinking is short term, get another contract, save my job. I know, win now. I I respect all that. But organizationally, if you decide, all right, this contract, we're getting out from underneath of it, which the Bengals don't have a great history of doing, and they decide it's time to move on from Andy Dalton, wouldn't it be nice to say, well, this dude's been in our system for a year.
Yeah.
And if worst case scenario, we can groom a guy to play that's been with our guys before, that's been in our system. And again, maybe that guy's AJ McCarron. I don't know. But to me, they have the luxury of knowing who their guy is next year. And so you can think bigger picture. And you don't have to reach for a guy just because we're desperate for a quarterback, but you might have to in a year.
Yeah. Yeah. I just think that when you're talking about what the next year looks like, I think it would be a 2010-11 style reboot, possibly, if you decide you're going
to organization
because you know Marvin has a huge say in what goes on with personnel, in working with Mike Brown and Duke and all the, and that whole team. And if you took him out and you brought somebody, it would be a whole new system. I mean, the systems would change. The personnel, the guy, you'd want your next coach to be able to pick his quarterback if he decided to move on from Andy Dalton. And I don't think it would matter that a guy had been in the system for a year. I don't know that it would. And I don't know that guy's out there that you say, well, I'm glad that this guy's been in your system for a year. I just don't know that necessarily exists. To me, it would be okay. You're looking for a first-round quarterback, you probably would start there and start it all over. I mean, that's probably what a blow-up situation would be if that's what you were talking about.
In a way, they'll be in a different spot than they were after 2010. When in 2011 draft, they had a number four pick.
Right.
And it ended up being A.J. Green. I feel pretty confident they're not going to be picking in the top four in 2016.
Right.
So let's say you've decided, all right, new coach wants a new quarterback. Well, where are the Bengals most likely to be drafting?
Yeah, 21.
Middle of the first round, 22. I mean, yeah, right. Really, seriously. So,
yes.
So if the idea is, well, we'll move on from Andy Dalton, and then we're going to go get the best college quarterback. No, you won't. You're not going to pick number one. You know, they're not going to be bad next year, you know, in all likelihood.
But that could be where you end up with Teddy Bridgewater type
or a
Dalton type or a Kaepernick. Guys, this is just a bad year to do that, I think, is really a bigger part of the point. And so maybe that's where you start. You wish that this were last year's class, which, you know, I've made the argument a lot of times. You know, I spent a good 2 months last year saying Jimmy Garoppolo in the second round might not be a terrible idea. That's a guy you could have in your system and let him sit and work. And in a couple of years, maybe you think about it. Of course, if they would have done that, they wouldn't have taken Jeremy Hill. So you look at both sides of it. There is a sacrifice to that. I think that you wish that it was last year's draft and there was that option in the second or third round. I just don't know that that's available, and I think you have to then look at, you know, push it forward to hope that next year is that year, because you know the idea of finding a free agent quarterback or being in the top 10. Both of those really are pretty far from reality at this point.
That's
that's where you're stuck. And that's where the NFL issue is where it's at, because the Bengals are among 15 to 20 teams that all are kind of facing the same problem. We don't have a guy, and we need a guy, and there's no place to get a guy.
Yep.
And unless you are in the top five, you're standing there with your hands up saying, we can't win.
Mm-hmm.
And I bet eventually that will hurt this league. Now, the league is very powerful. But I think it will hurt this league, because what is the thing that they strive on? Everybody on day one feels like they have a chance to win the Super Bowl. That's what they've been building on.
Yeah.
On 8-8,
right.
Parity, everybody is in it. Every fan is in it.
And we've had, four teams out of the AFC go to the Super Bowl in 10 years?
The ones with the quarterback.
Yeah.
And that's an NFL problem.
Right.
And the Bengals are a part of it. They're probably the poster child of it.
I guess my question is going to be, you know, what if you look at the guys that we all regard as the premier quarterbacks in the NFL. All right. Andrew Luck is on that list. I think Russell Wilson is, but, you know, not everybody's on board with that. But after that, all the other guys were drafted in 2005 or before. Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, I guess Joe Flacco's later, but Roethlisberger 2004, obviously Peyton Manning. So what happens in 3 or 4 years when those guys are either not in the league anymore or on the downside? Where's, you know,
there's been so many quarterbacks flushing out
Yeah.
It's been remarkable. I mean, in the last really 3 to 5 years, a lot of teams have been taking chances on quarterbacks, and very few have been working out. Mm-hmm. And they've been tanking teams. I mean, they've been tanking teams for that can't get out of the spiral for 2 to 3 years.
We're also in a different day and age, though. You know, first of all, nobody does what the Bengals did with Carson Palmer much, you know?
No.
I mean, that's owners don't
archaic.
Have the patience for
yeah.
it. Fans don't have the patience for it. Coach has got to win now. So there's two things that we had 20 years ago. Coach could come in day one, say, all right, 5-year plan. He's going to be the coach for 5 years. He can draft a guy. He can figure out a way to insulate him. He can figure out a way to develop him. And then you hope for results, you know, year three, year four. Well, now rookie contracts aren't as long. Owners are impatient. Fans are impatient. Coaches have 2 years to win.
Yeah, right.
You know, I mean.
Everywhere but here.
You have 2 years to win. And so part of me just kind of wonders if all of this is just a byproduct of, you know, the day and age we live in. How many of these guys that have, quote, flamed out could have been successful if we did it the old way, which we're not going back to. But if we did it the old way, which was coach is comfortable enough in his job that he can put a quarterback on the side, you know, it's no coincidence Marvin Lewis and Carson Palmer, their first years were both 2003. Marvin was comfortable enough. All right, I can put you on the sideline. There is no pressure to put you in. Mm. That's so unique. We don't have that anymore. So how many of these guys in the old way, sitting behind a veteran, holding a clipboard for a year, and then a coach who's comfortable enough that he can tell his owner he ain't going to play, or he can tell his fan base he ain't going to play, how many of those guys could have turned into productive quarterbacks in this league?
AJ McCarron is going to be that guy. You've got it. That is you just made the case for AJ McCarron. He sat, held the clipboard, he's the throwback. He's Carson Palmer.
He is AJ McCarron and Carson Palmer are.
But no, I hear your point. And I think you could make the argument. And I think Mike Zimmer was trying to do that in Minnesota this year with Ted Bridgewater, and then Matt Castle got hurt, and Chris Ponder sucked, and here you are. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think I think a lot of coaches would love to do that, but you're right. You just can't. But it's a good idea. I mean, who knows? We won't know. You know.
Right.
I mean, but you're. I mean, there's just the problem is, if you have a guy, if I told you this, you've got a guy which you already know who can get you to the playoffs, and you know what? There's a chance, maybe 15%, maybe 20%, that he could get hot enough to get you to the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
Or what would the percentage chance be of getting to the Super Bowl if you had drafted a guy? Or if you brought in anybody else who's complete unknown? What's the percentage chance of getting to the Super Bowl?
Well,
I mean, you're just playing odds at that point, aren't you?
You're just playing odds. But again, Andy Dalton's my quarterback next year. You know, I'm
right.
I don't think anybody who's being reasonable says you're going to replace him. That's impossible. I mean, the two guys at the top of this year's draft, Mariota and Winston, there's no consensus on how good they're going to be.
Right.
So I'm the first to admit you're not finding somebody to replace Andy
even
Dalton
for 20.
Next year.
Yeah, even for 2016, I guess is.
Right.
I mean,
so again, I guess if the Bengals had these huge holes and glaring needs all over the place, I mean, all over the field, and they got some you know areas to address. Then you go, okay, fine, we're set at quarterback, we're not looking at it. But they're drafting from a position of luxury, and when you're doing that, I think you can afford at least 3 months before the draft to say, look, we're open to anything.
Yep.
We're open to making the position better. Look, I don't know what that war room is going to be like. I don't know what their draft board is going to look like. But why dismiss any option before you have to?
I think that the one reason you do is because – you know, you've got it right there in front of you. Is that he's not thinking to 2016 or 2017. He's all about the best way to win in 2015 is to stand behind your man and this is my guy, and I'm not even inviting the idea. Maybe privately he's inviting the idea in the future, but I think he realizes if and when they do bail on Andy Dalton, it's probably a scenario where you just draft a quarterback in the first round. Whenever that year comes, that there is a guy there and you can make a play for him, or else you don't at all.
Then why not take the draft out of the coach's hands? Hey, look, we're building long term. You coach the team right now.
Right.
Why not, you know?
And maybe that's a decision that they'd have to make. And maybe that's a conversation that will be had. I think this coach is too ingrained into the decision-making process for that to happen.
And
that's the setup.
And a lot of that has worked.
That's why I think Marvin and Dalton, as you know, will be tied at the hip in sink or swim. And if one goes down, they're both going down. And I think if Marvin goes down, Dalton's probably going with him. And that's why I think if that's what happens, you're going to be riding Marvin and Dalton together, and the next guy that comes in is going to say, "Give me a first round draft pick, and let's use it on a quarterback."
All right, what do you think the conversation is next year if either the status quo remains or Andy Dalton wins a playoff game and AJ Green continues to be great, and I think there's places AJ Green can take his game that he hasn't been able to take it to yet. And now you've got to make a decision about him. You can franchise tag him.
Right.
That's a possibility. But you want to lock him in. Is this franchise going to pay both guys? If you're AJ Green, do you say, "I want the rest of my career tied to that quarterback," or I want to see if I can catch passes from somebody else? To me, that is, plus you know, there's the uncertainty with the coach, which I got to think winning a playoff game will mean more Marv.
Yes.
And then, you know, there's a bunch of other dudes whose deals are going to come up
a lot
in the next couple of years. To me, that's fascinating.
Yeah.
Will they make it AJ or Andy, or will they make it AJ? If AJ Green wants Calvin Johnson cash and Andy Dalton's only going to get paid more and more with this deal, the further you stay in it, you going to keep both?
Which is why this season is fascinating.
Yeah.
Because they have to earn it. I mean, this is the year where you learn, I think. This is the year where you learn if Dalton and Green together are worth investing in and building the team around, because it's like any of these guys. Tom Brady, when he first started, the other guys elevated him a little bit, mm-hmm. and then he made plays and he became who he was. Russell Wilson, you're seeing that in Seattle. But eventually, when guys hit this point in their career, teams have to make the decision, are we going to say these two guys can carry us and elevate us for the next 5 to 10 years, or do you go somewhere else? Because after this year, you're going to have to make a call on both, one or none, or the whole thing goes explosion. And because you're right, you can't afford it all, especially with all the contracts that are coming up. Guys are going to have to be paid. Major parts of your central core. I did a thing where I ranked, and this will come out next week, I ranked 1 through 62 as far as importance to the 2015 season, guys currently on the roster. Mm-hmm. And of my top 15, 10 of them are free agents next year.
Wow.
And one this year. Clint Bowling was in my top 15, mm-hmm. and then the other 9 were next year.
Right.
It's all either this or nothing, because that decision will have to be made. And that's why I think this season is such a dramatic swan song type thing. Either do it, or I think you have to move on. And that involves the AJ Green question.
Yeah.
And granted, it's out of his hands, because AJ Green is entering his fifth season. You have him locked up for this fifth season and the sixth season. He has zero control over
right.
that, whether he likes it or not. And he could choose to pout or hold out or complain, and I'm sure a lot of people would love to just pile cash into his front yard, but it's just not that easy, especially when you're looking at all the other expiring contracts. You could franchise him a second time if you wanted to see what a disgruntled receiver looks like. And so, but that's 6 years.
Yeah.
And then you hit receivers going into their 30s, and you could choose probably to just say, "All right, peace."
Yeah.
You know, and it's not worth it to pay a receiver who's going to be that old. Maybe the first 2 years you'd regret it, but the last 4 aren't worth it, or whatever you want to do. I whatever that is.
So how much of this feels like 2010? Marvin goes into last year of his deal. Kind of selling out to win right now.
Yep.
They do some things. They make the T.O. signing before them and Antonio Brian. It felt like the $8 million practice.
Yeah.
And it just felt like we're desperate to win right now. Kind of trying to save our jobs. No excuse here for Carson Palmer. This cast of characters has to do it now, or we're blowing it up. And with the exception of the head coach, in part because of what Carson decided to do with his life, that's what happened. How parallel are 2010 and 2015?
I think there is. I mean, I think you're exactly right. I think there is some
of that. Didn't end well.
It did not end well, but I think the approach is very different.
Right.
I mean, I think you knew that Chad and T.O. was an explosive situation, and you were just It was bad decision making. I think the philosophy is the same, but also though.
But when they did
that,
it,
but that became blow it up. I think almost solely because of what Carson Palmer did.
Yes, but when you go back to the Chad and T.O. thing, it sounds easy in hindsight to say, "Boy, that was a bad idea." But at the time, what did everybody say? Okay,
this is the most talented roster ever.
Right. This isn't the most ideal thing. We're kind of having to hold our nose. But, man, they got to win this year.
Yeah.
And no more excuses for Carson. We have to surround him with the best guys. And Terrell Owens wasn't our first choice, but he was our best guy. Which then takes me to the approach in free agency this year. Like I've taken control of your podcast, by the way.
Yeah, no, I'm on board.
So,
let's do it.
So, typically, they make no splash in March. Like last year, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers win free agency. They were awful this year, and we make fun of it. Does this mean that they approach free agency a little bit different? Marvin talked with you about that last week. Does it mean they start to do things that are a little out of character for them because there's such a premium on winning in 2015?
I think so. I mean, a little bit.
And Ndamukong Suh!
And Ndamukong Suh, sign him right now. Bring in everybody.
Yeah.
I mean, line the whole defense up with $100 million free agents.
But so if you're going to say we're not going to look long-term in the draft, then fine, awesome. You better almost sell yourself out to win right now.
Yeah.
And that's what they did in 2010.
I think that is partially what is yes and no. I don't think that you're going to see – here's the difference to me is 2010, I don't know that they knew at the time they were completely selling themselves out, and I don't think that they had plans of blowing it up until – Carson blew it up.
Yeah.
Because it all started with him, because he was the centerpiece. And when he left, it was a natural line in the sand that you could say, all right, we just need to start over.
Right.
And it's time to reboot. And they went 4-12. Now,
the most unlikable 4-12 of all time.
Maybe. Well, that 10 game losing streak goes down as one of the, maybe to me, the lowest moment in Bengals history, and there are some low moments, even worse than the Shula years, because of the expectations and the unlikability and everything else.
It was the first time in my career where in the middle of that, like that November and that December, is the first time I genuinely just don't want to come to work.
Yeah.
I mean, and I'm not, you know, I'm being serious. But, you know, you talk about how the Carson thing really ignited the reboot, and it did, but – you know, before that, they have this press conference, Marvin and Mike, the 27 minutes from hell.
Ugh.
But the theme of that just felt like, all right, we're distancing ourselves from what we just did.
Yeah.
And there's going to be changes. Maybe we're not going to change our philosophies. That was a major theme of that press conference.
Yeah.
But it did kind of feel like what you just watched, you're not going to see anymore.
Yeah.
And that really ended up being the case. Now, who knows how history would have changed if Carson never would have done what he did. Mm-hmm. Chances are we're not talking about Andy Dalton right now.
We're definitely not. We're probably still talking about Carson Palmer.
Right. So I just if that year it did have this feeling of, all right, Carson hasn't been great the last couple of years. 2009 he wasn't great. You know, he won 10 games, but he wasn't great. Wasn't good in the postseason. This cast is getting a little stale. We're going to try to add one or two pieces. Coach goes into his last season. We're going to try to win right now. And it just felt like they did things that were out of character as an organization. Yeah. And I just wonder how much consideration you give that heading into this year.
Yeah, I don't know that they're going to do things completely out of character. I think going out and getting a few pieces in free agency is different. I don't know. And maybe I'm completely wrong on this. I just don't think that going out and saying you're going to be aggressive in free agency, as long as you're not going out and spending huge piles of cash, I don't know. I mean, they have to be careful what they do, but I think that they have built such a strong nucleus and foundation here. Where their foundation, I think, was the problem before. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was stale. It was old. It was Carson, clearly, who had an undercurrent of not really quite believing,
and maybe
that's something that's bubbling up now at this point. But I don't think so, and I think there's still a feeling of newness with Hugh and really with Paulie G, but definitely with Hugh that can kind of carry the optimism factor. Whereas with Brat, it was so, people were it was so done. You know, I mean, where you're at with that. I mean, you had a lot of different pieces to that.
Yeah.
That every year is different. I see what you're saying, and I understand that winter now can be the same, but it was blown up because they went 4-12 and Carson Palmer left. And I don't think they're going to go 4-12.
No.
And so, and I think that's really where the difference lies to me. I do want to bring in a little bit of audio that I have from Mobile. Is it okay if
Please,
I do that?
Yeah, I can't wait to hear it.
Can I do that?
Yeah.
So I want to take a quick second to bring in some of the stuff because I know a lot was written about the conversations we had with Marvin down there. So I just want to bring in a little bit of that, mainly him talking about free agency and him talking about the depth on this team. So this was myself and Jeff Hobson at the Senior Bowl talking with Marvin Lewis.
In that respect, it seems like the continuity you'll have with your staff this year compared to last year is good for building, you know, building on the foundation, but also knowing exactly how to improve things to be more efficient. You've got the majority of your, especially your coordinators, you know, back for a second year.
Coordinators have an opportunity to, that they will, you know, be better in every area because they've had an opportunity to digest what we've done, how we've done it, and what we need to do better. And then, again, like I say, this whole period of time from evaluation of us, system analysis, to you know, things that we need to rectify and to implement it to be better, to the whole draft process, to the prior to the draft process, obviously the free agent process that we've got to shore up some areas. We're going to shore up some areas and through free agency, and then continue to put the team, make the team stronger through the draft, better the team through the draft.
Yeah. Sounds like it might be a little bit more active in free agency than it might have been in the last couple of years.
Well, I think we have some. We feel we have some holes to fill. We have some free agents at positions for us where, you know, they're a critical part of our depth. So we've got to work on parallel paths as well, you know, and because I think the way we're set up to go through it and look at it is that, you know, let's go pick off whatever positions we can pick off, and then work the rest, consider the rest of the draft.
But
don't go in and say, well, we're just going to focus on this. Let's go get the best players that fit us in whatever ways we've agreed upon early on at some point in March, and then finish the rest of the process in May.
And it doesn't, it's not going to probably be an eight. It's not going to be a tier A guy. It could be a tier.
Don't know who it could be, but let's, you know, let's we got to work the process. We have to let the process work, and we've got to be great at it, and we've got to be diligent at it, and I think everybody's committed to that. It's a different feel than where we've been. It's not a status quo. You know, there's not been a status quo conversation. Oh, we'll be okay. We'll just get these guys back. No. That's cool. We got to be better.
As Mike does. Mike kind of in that.
He's the one leading the charge.
Yeah.
You know that. You know, they don't want to hear. We'll be better when we get these guys back. No. We need to get better. He knows we need to get better. He's pushing people to identify players that will make us a better football team.
In free agency.
I know you've talked a lot about how free agency can be overrated, but do you feel like if the place that you're in now is more conducive to going after maybe some of those bigger names that are out
there?
Well,
we're not going to change how a guy plays. The guy has to fit us for what we're looking for.
Yeah.
So, you know, you got to be careful with what you say, big free agent, you know what I mean?
Right, yeah.
That term that doesn't fit me very well.
Right, yeah.
Because, you know, the guy's got to be a fit to what we're doing.
Yeah.
Because we don't want to take a step sideways to try to immerse somebody else into something more contained before. So this guy's got to be an accent and an upgrade for things you're doing.
Some had good success too. And now guys with like Nate Clements and Ben Jarvis.
Right,
not a major guy, but guys that slip and tumble right away.
Guys that come in right away and play at above a starting level, not just a starter, but play above the starting level and make everybody else around them better.
Did you think, in injuries obviously, like this would make it more obvious, but did you feel like your guys' depth was just a tick lower than last year and that was a part of it?
No, everybody talked about how deep you are, but if you lose too many guys at one spot, you don't have depth.
Right. Yeah, it's impossible.
Depth is an across-the-board thing. Yeah. But if you just say, okay, we're going to take a howitzer through one area or one position, there's no such thing as enough depth.
You know, right.
We didn't have enough linebackers. We didn't have enough recruit. We didn't have enough receivers.
Right.
We went down three tight ends at times. So, I mean, you look at where you things injuries hit you.
So let me ask you this. When we've talked a lot about free agency, let's do this real quick. Where would you give me rank your top three positions that you would go to strictly with free agency? Because that's where it has to start. And basically what Marvin said is start with free agency and then figure the draft out after that.
Somebody who can chase quarterbacks.
Absolutely.
Somebody who can chase quarterbacks. Look, they've invested in the draft on the defensive line, and the return the early return on investment hadn't been very good. Now, long term might be, but Margus Hunt, Will Clark, Brandon Thompson, Devin Still, I haven't gotten it.
No.
Geno Atkins, do we know what Geno Atkins we're going to see next year? It's kind of like Joey Votto.
Yeah.
There's what he used to be and what I think he can be, but can I bank on it?
Right.
Robert Gathers, God love him, but
probably time.
We're on the 18th hole.
Yeah.
It's an uncomfortable conversation about Domantas Peko because who doesn't like him?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I need guys who can chase the quarterback.
Yeah. I agree.
On the edge or up the middle, but, you know, preferably on the edge. I need a pass rusher. As much as we've talked about Andy Dalton for three and a half weeks, the disappearance of the pass rush to me was the biggest headline of the season.
Yes. No, I absolutely agree. And the biggest glaring hole that emerged. And that's why I think, and for a couple of reasons here, I have my order as linebacker, defensive end, tight end in free agency alone. That's not my total position thing, just because I think wide receiver, offensive line are draft staples.
Yes.
Where you need to go. They fit perfectly. You need a wide receiver you can develop. Marvin Jones, Mohamed Sanu, going to be entering contract years coming up. God, what the draft has become for young wide receivers. You saw it this past year.
Yeah.
Holy crap.
Right.
I went back and looked at the 10 receivers taken in the second and third round last year. 8 of them were huge contributors, at least 30 receptions. Jarvis Landry had 84 receptions. I mean, the
right.
talent you were, Devontae Adams out there this past weekend, the talent you're seeing at that position in the middle rounds is just a suction fit for this team and what they need. And offensive line is perfect. You've got guys.
Yeah.
You probably need some because
add some depth.
You need the swing tackle, and you need guys in case guys get hurt, and you need somebody when Andrew Whitworth eventually decides to move on.
Right.
His contract also expiring.
But not a glaring huge guy.
Not glaring. But
yeah.
but using a top draft, one of your top two draft picks on him, you would be
this franchise has done I think a pretty good job of that.
Yeah, they have. Of planning or 2 years ahead and saying that's what we need. They're very good at seeing. They look at the draft through a 3-year window.
Mm-hmm.
They don't look at it through a 1-year window. Maybe it's closer to a 1-year window this year because of everything we've talked about. But linebacker because of Vontaze Burfict, Ray Maluga.
Yeah.
What the hell do you have at this position? You know you don't have anything behind him. We learned that.
Yeah.
This year.
I don't know what I have with him, and I don't know if Ray's going to be here.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, they're probably going to have to try to sign Ray Maluga, but who knows where that situation could definitely drag on. It could be a repeat of what you saw a couple years ago with him.
It just feels like the bloom on the Emmanuel Lemur, Vinny Ray, you know.
There's not enough there.
Yeah.
I mean, they didn't have any. I mean, they're. Yeah. I mean, I thought Nico Johnson was such a nice man. I really enjoyed talking with him.
Hey, I want to watch Sean Porter play next year.
Right. Oh, Sean Porter.
You talking about. So, yeah, you got
to. But they had to pull Nico Johnson off of Kansas City's practice squad, and he started 2 weeks later.
Yeah.
That's where you're at on this team, behind two guys who you now have no idea about.
Mm-hmm.
They've got to start there. And linebackers, in the mid to late first round, you can get the best linebacker in the draft. That has happened the last few years. Clay Matthews came out of the like 25th pick, Ryan Shazier last year. There's a ton of great linebackers that, because it's not a valued position. It's not one. It's not defensive tackle. It's not quarterback. It's not offensive line. All these things that teams. It's that secondary market, and you need it, and it's right there at 21. I mean, I think you could draft it, but you need veterans that have done it to secure that. Hey,
yeah.
You have guys
you need
that
a guy
can
who's
do
done it.
It
before.
You need a guy that's done it before,
and
as well.
And it just seems like that position, and you know they've mined so well your Vontaze Burfict, Emmanuel Lemur types, you know, guys on the fringes. But man, yeah, that there's an expiration date on that. There just is, and so to me, a
they
proven
need two
veteran,
guys that could start is what they need.
A proven veteran guy, and then you mentioned tight end, and you know, to me, the thing that's really interesting about next year is 2013. There was so much optimism, and they delivered on it, but there was so much optimism because it's going to be Tyler Eifert. We're 2 years into Tyler Eifert's NFL career. I have no idea. I have no idea what he is.
I know he's not durable.
I have no idea what he is. You know, I've asked you on my show before, what's the outcome going to be with Jermaine Gresham? And it just kind of feels like, you've said this, it just kind of feels like everybody's...
It's time.
It's just time for him to go.
And especially there are a number of, I would say, very similar tight ends on the free agent market that you could spend the money on a guy that you know you can trust and rely a little bit more and let Jermaine, maybe he needs a change of scenery.
Yeah, and so I need a guy there that is... an additional option. He can run block, but he could also maybe give me what I don't know that Tyler Eifert can. Now, hopefully Tyler Eifert ends up being that guy that Hugh can put all over the place and, you know, you can get a lot of production out of him, but I don't know what he is. So that position to me has to be something they target in free agency.
Tight end is a great place to start in free agency because it's time to stop drafting tight ends in the first round. You know, I think it's just time. I think you realize now that maybe it's a good idea, but you've done it twice. I don't think you need to go for the third strike.
Yeah.
I think in tight ends, especially you learn who they are pretty quickly and what they can and cannot do. Mm-hmm. And going and finding a guy and spending the money on a guy who is similar in skill set to Jermaine Gresham, there's about five of them out there that will be out there. Maybe even a guy who's a little bit better and definitely more trustworthy and who's not going to drive you absolutely insane anytime he shows up as probable or questionable, I think is a good spot to look at. I mean, a guy, you know, who knows? I don't know where all these guys are going to land financially, but guys like Charles Clay from Miami, and I mean, there's guys of that ilk where you'd feel great. They show up, and now you've got your two tight end set that you want to use, and you feel a little bit more reliable in it. Those, if they got one of each of those, if they got a
defensive
end,
before the draft, then I'd do cartwheels.
I think that's it. I think that's it. I think a linebacker, a defensive end or tackle, whatever, I don't care, and a tight end, and I'm done. Yeah. And I just say thank you. Free agency was great. I was happy to come in, and guys that will at least compete to start, or you already are plugging in as a starter.
Right.
Three guys at those three positions, and then you use the draft on a wide receiver, offensive lineman, whatever the hell else you want to in positions of luxury, and your offseason is great, and how good would you feel about this team going into next year?
I what I've enjoyed about the draft over the last couple of years, and you know, the results have been varied, and the jury is still out on a lot of them, but I've enjoyed the fact that they've gone into the draft, and it hasn't been like – it's like the year they drafted Andre Smith, and tackles started coming off the board really early, and it's like, oh, my God, are they going to miss the tackle they desperately need?
Yeah.
They haven't been in that position. Part of it's been because they've been drafting late, and so it's just hard to be that way when you're drafting late. But I would love for a productive enough March, early April to go into April kind of playing with house money.
Yeah.
And I get the extra picks that come with, you know, the losing free agents and – I all of a sudden there's so many different directions you can go in. That'd be a lot of fun, and that would be kind of cool. It's not going to be anything anybody wants to talk about.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's been funny over the last couple of years because they've drafted later, and because the Andy Dalton thing hovered over everything last year. All anybody wanted to talk about was Andy Dalton.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't be a sexy draft, but I think could be. Look, that's the next half of the decade right there. So to do it from a position of luxury after a productive free agency period would be awesome.
And, you know, you talk about a position of luxury when you're going to have at the.
So then you could draft a quarterback.
You've got four picks in the first. Yes, four picks in the first three rounds.
Yeah,
I mean those two third round picks. I mean, could I mean the last time they had two third
you
round
could trade
picks,
all four and take Mariota
and take Mariota. Trade your whole draft to move up to number one. And take Jameis.
Yeah, you could Ricky Williams that thing and just
just
deal the first couple of days of the draft.
I love it. Can we talk about insane draft scenarios? You want to do that?
Yeah, sure.
Everybody, let's trade it all. And Dalton to Tennessee.
Yeah,
Andy Dalton and your top four picks to Tennessee.
Okay, four
for their pick and take Marcus Mariota and run the read option. With Jeremy Hill.
Can they get Chip Kelly, too?
And yes. I think that's the only way that would actually happen is if they did get Chip Kelly in the process,
man,
because
that'd be awesome.
Marvin ain't doing that. Well, Mo, thanks.
Has this been your longest podcast?
No.
No?
Close, but no. Actually, the one we did the day after the season ended was about $1.20.
Oh, wow.
Skinny and I went. We didn't know it was. There was a malfunction in my recording device, and it was clipping off, like, 3 seconds at a time without me realizing it, just intermittently, and I didn't know why. So I thought we had gone for an hour, but we'd actually gone for an hour and 20 minutes. And when I posted it and everyone complained and said, there's like 3 seconds missing all over the place, I had to go back and get a separate audio.
Oh, wow.
And but anyway, so it was about 20. So you're – but this may be the first time where I realized how long it was and it being this long. Although yeah. If you're okay with it, I'm okay with it. You may not be okay with it, and I just haven't asked you.
Yeah, trust me. Sit here and do this all day.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's really so. Yeah, you want to talk about anything else? That's life.
Life is good. You haven't brought up the Knicks, which I'm happy about.
I haven't. It's sad.
Yeah, it kind of is. I mean, it's
They just signed Carmelo.
Yeah.
Why did they do that?
Because they.
When does this guy want anything to make you be like, this is where we centered around? I don't get it.
Well,
outside of just torturing you,
Syracuse friends of ours will say he won the national title.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, okay. Congratulations on saying that. Yeah.
Like, you know, we were talking before about how smart fans are, and the best organizations treat their fans like they're really smart. You know, it's been always my thing with the Reds and the Joey Votto thing.
Mm-hmm.
Most of us would have understood why you would have said to Joey, "Yeah, go make a quarter of a bill elsewhere." You know,
right?
The Knicks don't treat their fans; they treat their fans like they're dopes. So it's like, boy, they're gonna go away if we don't keep a star here. Like,
no, they won't.
No, they won't.
They want you to win.
If you actually, for the first time in a decade and a half, show that you have a plan. That fan base is savvier than I think most. They would understand that.
Phil Jackson's the problem.
Yeah, Phil Jackson's. So Phil Jackson has this buddy of his named, I think his name's Charlie Rosen.
Yeah.
And he's written a couple of books about Phil Jackson and how awesome the triangle is. So the Knicks get off to a 5-36 start.
Right.
Rosen, who in the preseason went on like every basketball-related show and talked about how Phil Jackson, the triangle, was going to turn the Knicks around. Nowhere to be seen. They win 3 out of 4. All of a sudden, Charlie Rosen
shows up.
Oh, hey, look, the triangle's starting to work in New York. That's great. They're 8-37. Awesome. Thanks, Charlie. Phil Jackson.
You throw Charlie Rosen under the bus. He's just a pundit.
Yeah,
that's all he is.
I'm rooting for the Bucks because they have Kenyon Martin.
Can I just tell you this though? And I kind of briefly touched on this in my blog the other day. The NBA is awesome right now.
Yes.
Not your team, obviously.
No,
they're terrible. But which is, has to even make it worse.
Yes.
Because there's so many great, fun, young teams out there, and yours just sucks, but that's okay. But, like, I could watch Golden State play Portland forever.
I could watch
the Thunder or any of these fun, young teams that are out there. Or Atlanta's even fun to watch right now.
And what is kind of cool is the networks have bailed on, like, you know, the Knicks and Lakers are scheduled a bunch. And they, you know, TNT and ESPN have both said, all right, fine, we're going to put on the Hawks and we're going to put on the Warriors and we're going to put on the Portland Trailblazers because it's a good product and because there's enough basketball fans who do want to see this.
Right.
And not maybe nearly as many as we thought that we'll just watch the Lakers and Knicks
because
it's the Lakers and Knicks. And it seems to me like networks have finally wised up to you're right. There's a ton of great talent, a ton of awesome storylines.
Unique players.
Unique coaches. it's a great time to follow the league. Yeah. It really, really is.
It is.
You know, there's a lot of people in this part of the country who, you know, couldn't name for you two Atlanta Hawks, which is unfortunate, but the product on the court right now is really, really good.
Yeah.
The leadership in the NBA, I think Adam Silver is going to do a great job.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you still have your polarizing guys like LeBron, and you still have success in enough.
Even that's fun to watch because it's such a unique situation.
It is. You know, there's still enough, I'll call them heritage franchises, doing well. And I consider the Spurs to be one of those, and I consider the Bulls to be one of those, even though they've had some issues over the last 3 weeks. It's really compelling. The problem is, in the NBA, at the beginning of the year, there's, you know, 15 to 20 teams who know they have no chance.
Yeah.
That's something they're going to have to fix long term. But this season, if you haven't watched the Golden State Warriors.
Holy crap, it's great.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Yeah, and I don't know what I like more. Golden State's what they are, or just watching Damian Lillard, period.
Yeah.
That dude is just, he is unbelievable. Yeah. And just, I mean, he will just take over games, hit shots you can't even comprehend, and then attack the bucket and always try to dunk on somebody.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
somebody bigger. Yeah.
The game, I can't remember the game I watched, the game where he went off in the fourth quarter in overtime about a month ago for, like, God knows, like 20, in which used to be a lot in a period, and had a chance to literally have a game-winning dunk on a dude. He could have just dropped it over him, but he said, no, I want to win this game down. And throw it down on a dude's face. He missed the dunk, but I didn't care. That was the right move.
Yeah.
Because it's just fun to watch, and it's just a cool league right now, and I really can admit I got away from it for a while. I got real sick of the same old storylines, and a lot of what you're talking about, the way the networks treated it, of just trotting the garbage teams out there. But it's young and fun now, and it makes me kind of want to maybe buy League Pass.
And it dispels. I mean, the two teams in New York are terrible. Philadelphia's awful. Boston's bad. The Lakers are terrible. Miami's not
very good. The Sixers suck. They're
like all these big markets that you typically, you know, people, you know, and look where it's thriving. It's thriving in San Antonio, and up until last year, it was thriving in Indianapolis, and it's doing well in Memphis, and it's always done well, at least from an interest standpoint, in Utah. Portland is thriving right now. Mm-hmm. Oklahoma City.
Yeah.
There's a lot of places. The National Basketball Association is not only thriving, but it's the only game in town.
Yeah.
And those aren't huge markets. You think of the NBA.
Do they need to do that? Do they need to move some franchises around and end up in more places where they're not competing with the NFL?
Maybe.
Maybe that's an answer, because you are doing so well there. I mean, you'll never lose your massive. But maybe they need to get out of some of these places where there's an NFL team and move to somewhere where there's
Louisville.
Not.
Louisville.
Absolutely.
I'd be on board.
Louisville should have a team. They have the facility. Yeah.
They have the facility and
a basketball fan base.
As popular as the University of Louisville and the University of Kentucky are, I think there is enough of an appetite for it.
Oklahoma City.
Yeah, I think it would work there. I think there's enough interest. And I've said before, if Louisville got a team, I would abdicate my Knicks fandom.
You would.
I would clearly do it for Cincinnati, but that's never going to happen.
Right.
I would bail on the Knicks.
I say, Let's start a campaign right now.
Yeah. I tried to buy the Clippers when they were for sale.
How'd that turn out?
It didn't turn out great.
Let's start at we're gonna renovate Cincinnati Gardens. That's what we're gonna do. The U.S. Bank's not happening. You know, there's too much money. The ownership there, they're ingrained. They're in bed with the Cyclones. It's like they're clones.
How's that working out?
It's working out great. So we're gonna renovate Cincinnati Gardens.
Okay.
And Dana Gardens, and we're gonna go to Adam, pitch to Adam Silver to bring the NBA team here to Cincinnati.
You know,
that's it. That's the place.
Being half serious, I think in the next 20 years, Lexington, Cincinnati, Dayton is gonna be an enormous metropolitan area.
Yeah,
you know, Lexington is kind of growing north.
Mm-hmm.
Cincinnati is growing north and south.
Yeah,
Dayton has grown south. When I was going to UD in the 90s, you'd leave Cincinnati, you'd have this big, like, 40-mile patch where you saw nothing, you'd get to downtown Dayton. Now it's all one big area.
Yeah. Hare Arena. That's where you're going with this, isn't it?
Yeah, we're
going
to put an NBA team in Hare Arena. You know, it's like you used to have Kansas City, Omaha in the NBA.
Yeah.
You know, or, you know, Fort Wayne, Detroit. You can't tell me that in a huge sort of geographic region that size, then throw into it Louisville and Columbus. With the right owner can make any sports team work.
Sure.
And here's the thing about the NBA, and I've said this to people, you know, all the time. You're always one guy away from being relevant. You're always one guy away.
Yeah.
You know, the Cleveland Cavaliers have been irrelevant for 30 years. They get LeBron James. Well, they're the hottest team in the league. Mm-hmm. He goes away. Nobody cares. He comes back. All of a sudden, they matter again. You're one guy away. In baseball, you're never one guy away.
No.
Barry Bonds was, you know, the best player in the sport for 15 years. Never won a World Series.
Yeah.
The Reds have Joey Votto. Joey Votto at his best is probably not good enough to put him in the World Series. Football, you're not one guy away. In the NBA, you're one guy away.
Yeah.
So
football, you might be one guy away. You're one quarterback.
One quarterback away, right? We just illustrated.
And we tied it all together.
So, right owner, right geographic area, yes. Right demographics. It's a more diverse area right now than it has ever been. Right arena, one guy away. The NBA could work, even though it will never happen.
All right. Well, I'm going to clip off that whole portion of the podcast. not just because we talked. No, I'm keeping the.
Oh.
I'm sending it to Adam Silver. And I'm not just. I might clip it off. No, we'll keep it. No, we'll keep it. I like that was good discussion. Good. We need to spread. Our people can't just be about the NFL. They've got to expand. There's too many people that don't care about the NBA, and it's fun to watch. That's all I'm saying.
It is.
So this is going to be where it starts. This is where it starts. This is where we pull some of the NFL audience.
I think
audience.
You should go to your bosses and see if you and I could do an NBA podcast every week, and then just watch the numbers.
Just roll in.
Opportunities for Cincinnati.com.
Absolutely.
You know, through the roof.
I don't see it going any other direction. We should probably end it now, unless you want to talk about another sport. What do you think? Hockey? Just had the All-Star game in Columbus. We can go in and talk some hockey. Sergei Bobs.
Yeah.
I just call him Bobs.
Bobrovsky.
He's out. He's hurt.
17-12 was the final score in the NHL All-Star game.
Was it really?
Yeah.
I wish hockey was more like that. That's like lacrosse. Maybe lacrosse is the next.
Have you been to a Blue Jackets game?
Absolutely. I love
fantastic.
It.
Fantastic.
Had a great time.
It's fantastic.
It is. I would absolutely say if you have not, two things you should do. Go to a Pacers game and go to a Blue Jackets game.
Couldn't agree more.
It's an easy trip up. You can even come back or do it on a Saturday night and get a hotel in downtown. Both those downtowns are great. Columbus near the arena is fun.
Yeah. but
it's a great idea for a trip if you want to go up. It's fantastic.
I'm going up for a 5 o'clock Saturday game in late February, and so the game will be over by 7:45, and then there's the arena district. You can get after it. It's really cool, and I went up there for a playoff game last year, and I said, I came back on my show and said, I just wish we had an indoor winter sport.
Yeah.
And I prefer basketball, but if it was NHL hockey, first of all, I'm just, I like events. I like it when stuff is downtown, but those sports have playoffs.
Yes.
Playoffs are fun.
Playoffs are fun.
And, playoffs equal opportunities for playoff victories, and we could use those. So.
It's been God. It's so crazy when you think to how long it's been for this. I mean, Trent did that when the season ended.
Yeah.
About just this whole city and how long it's been since they've had a playoff series victory. It's just sad. I grew
Dodgers.
Up here.
Dodgers, 1995.
That's it. I mean, I grew up here, man. I get it. It's rough. That's why we said before, just for the sake of sanity of everyone, us mainly included, we really needed that win. In Indianapolis.
Mm-hmm. Would have been nice.
Did not happen. All right. Well, I know that this whole thing that you did here at the end was just to try to get the record for the longest
time. It was. Yes.
It was.
Yeah.
And I think you got it.
So,
now.
Yeah. Take that, skinny.
Take that, skinny. You showed him. We can be more long winded than anybody else out there.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks
and just a reminder to everybody, we're going to keep these podcasts going through the off season as long as I can. And I'll be bringing all kinds of guests in and periodically. I'm hoping to do it every 2 to 3 weeks and try to keep it fairly regular for you guys. And so that'll be coming up throughout the rest of the offseason and, of course, all the coverage on Cincinnati.com. So to the three of you still listening, thank you for sticking around. You probably already know to go to Cincinnati.com to find all the coverage. So thank you, John, Terry, and Jane. All right. Well, I'm out of here. Mo, thanks again for joining the podcast, and we will talk to you next time on Scribe Session.